Let's talk about stress, or rather stimulus. A lot of people who don't realize that stress and stimulus are exactly the same principle, just as laughter and crying can seem very much the same, just in the same as an hallucination or a perception have the same kind of triggering in the neuronal system. Likewise, stress and stimulus are two words of how do you deal with the unknown. Are you able to play with it, and then it's a stimulus, or are you resistant, reluctant to play with it, and then it is a stress. The word stress was already used in the work of Hans Selye, S-E-L-Y-E, Selye, but you pronounce it Selye. And in his work, he looked at the way that cells change in their behavior in their specific environment. His books are very interesting, very easy to read, and a very good description of what happens at that level of interplay where the body is dealing with changes of the environment. He talks about the endocrine system, the endocrine regulation, specifically about the corticosteroid hormones, and most explicitly about the relationship between the mineralocorticosteroids and the glucocorticosteroids. And as the names already imply, the mineral corticosteroids are of a mineral quality, or they evoke a mineral response or a mineral effect in the body, it's structuring. And the glucocorticosteroids are like the glucose in the plants, the sugars in the plants. It's a plant-like response in the body, which is that of connecting or opening up or transporting. So essentially it describes the relation between a steady state or fixed structure versus a process structure. It is the description of state versus process. It's therefore important to look at what he describes in that much more general sense, that he's not talking about the steroid molecules and how they work, but rather at the process that is being addressed, of which these steroid molecules are just a simple trigger in the system. And what he then describes is the transition between a steady state and a changing state. In his description, this is mainly focused on the relationship between a normal situation in the body or body inflammation. And so these steroid hormones are known as the pro-inflammatory and the anti-inflammatory molecules. You could say that the anti-inflammatory ones are they get the inflammation out of the way and they solidify the situation, and the pro-inflammatory molecules are the ones that want to get out of a fixed situation, they want to get out of a stuck situation, they want to induce a new kind of mobility, a new kind of movement, and that movement we call fever. In general, you can say that in this kind of fever and anti-fever response, the body is trying to reset the boundaries within the system. As you might appreciate, the resetting of the boundary of the system is something which works in the body, but also in the psyche, and also in society, and also in the world around us. There are four levels in which we define our relationship to the environment. And in each case, we must maintain and preserve the integrity of that relationship. And in dealing with the environment, we are always in part dealing with things that already exist and are stable. Let's say the earth element of the universe. We are also aware that in this fixed universe, actually everything is a process. So we must take into account that things will be changing. So when we build a house on a rock, we need to take into account that there might be earthquakes or floods or rains or whatever. There will be change because the nature that we know, which is fixed, is part of the nature which is flowing. I just look at the mountains and look at the valleys that have been carved out by the water, and you can see how much the process dominates the structure. So we need to relate to the process and understand the process and define ourselves with respect to the process. In that sense, we need to learn to surf the wave. We need to relate to the process in such a manner that it will not topple us over. At a deeper level, we will need to understand that the processes that we live amongst are part of larger processes. At the moment that the planetary system goes into the Pleiadian photon belt, evidently there will be more light in the environment, which is the equivalent of more heat in the environment. So the solar system, the planets and the planet Earth will heat up. So yes, we can expect global warming on the Earth and on the other planets for the simple reason that we've entered into a hotter area of the environment. And if we didn't take that into account, then it still is what is happening. Another part of the story, of course, is that the oil industry has tried to get everybody addicted to oil, because oil was also the measure of the value of the dollar. And so everybody has been trying to sell oil as petrol fumes, as plastics, as pharmaceuticals, as artificial fertilizers, and so on. As a result of which, oil has now been polluting the planet to such an extent that a lot of the natural processes are being interfered with and go chaotic, which in part we then experience as a heating up of the planet. So we should not underestimate that when we live in an environment, we not only need to understand that the processes are variable, but that there are conditions around us which will determine how these processes that we live by may shift. And I'm now simply describing it in the environment around us, because we have more say experiential knowledge of that than what happens within us. But what happens within us is exactly the same, just at a different level. There's a fourth level that we need to take into account. So we must not fixate ourselves on things being structured and rigid. We must account that those are actually processes, and we must learn to surf the processes. We must learn to realize that there are other processes which can also come into play, as a result of which we may have to change the direction of the way we surf on those processes. Maybe we have to even surf onto another wave to be able to go forward. But we also need to understand that all these processes, whatever form or shape they are, at the most basic level, they are always universal processes. And it is in that sense that we can then see that whether something is a stress or a stimulus depends on how you look at it. If you assume that things are fixed, then you will be shaken at the moment that things change. If you assume that everything is in a universal flux, then you're already happy that you have some kind of foothold and are able to do something. So the difference between stress and stimulus is actually the midpoint between the extremes of looking at reality as fixed, or looking at reality as a realization, not a noun but a verb, and that the realization is actually an appreciation of cosmic creation. So on the one hand, you have cosmic creation, which is a bubbling, ongoing process of everything is possible and everything is happening. And the other side of it, this is the way it is now. And in that sense, you're right in the middle between cosmic creation, which is the full potential of all of the futures and everything that can and will happen. And on the other hand, that what exists now, which is simply a representation of that what happened in the past. So it's more than just looking at the present and the future, but it's also looking at a kind of difference in participation. And that is the difference between perception and projection. If you work with projections, then that means that you are relying on something that you know and you're projecting that on the environment. You create an expectation, and at the moment that that expectation is not fulfilled, something in you gets shaken, gets shattered, and you need to adapt for that, and that's the experience of stress. Your expectation was wrong, and as a result you need to compensate for that, you need to correct for that. You have a double task, so instead of just being busy with what's happening, you also need to renegotiate your relation to what is happening. If, on the other hand, you are in a full appreciation of the world as it is, then whatever happens is a new adventure, is a new input, a new experience. And then you will discover if your body is able to deal with it, yes or no. Those two extremes are not just the difference between stress and stimulus, or the things that are and the things that are becoming, but it is also the difference between the model of reality as a reality, or reality as a realization. If you go by the perspective that reality is real and must be so, then you will experience a lot of stress, because you will discover that the reality as it was is not the reality that is. It will keep on changing, and if you do not account for those changes and those potential of changes, you will be disappointed all the time, which means you will be experiencing a lot of stress. If, on the other hand, you know that the reality that is only a realization as part of an ongoing process of creation, then what would the next thing be? And more importantly, what is your relationship to the next thing that can be? Can you relate to it or not? What kind of beast will it be? Is it a friendly beast, or a beast that you first need to learn to talk with? Or is it something more than that, that you can actually, depending on the way that you talk to this beast of the newness of creation, you can influence what it might be doing, so that you're not just inspired, but you're also inspiring, and that you're not in a state of stress or a state of stimulus, but that you actually go into a state of enthusiasm. And enthusiasm comes from the Greek word entheos, and within theos, God or godliness or creatorship. So in enthusiasm, you're part of the creative process. What I've described is the work of Hans Selye, because he very neatly, elegantly, concisely described this whole principle of stress, which of course is the counterpart of stimulus in the body. So in reading his books, you can actually see his detective work, and you can see his finding how in the body the difference between stress and stimulus actually lies within the cells, because it is within the cells that the cells determine if they're going to make a fever to dissolve a situation, open new ways for change within the body, or if they get rid of the fever by fossilizing the structure in place. It's a bit the level where you can see that the whole body operates as a liquid crystal, and that in the adrenal gland there is this little switch which says, okay, let's crystallize a bit more now, let's fluidize it a bit more, and that it is the helm between the degree of solidity or fluidity of the body. And what you can then see in people, in yourself, when you go into a fever state or you come out of the fever state, look at it as a thermostat setting of the temperature being very high or the temperature being very low. Very high, everything is close to burning. Very low, everything is close to freezing. But somewhere in between, you have this neutral state. And then appreciate that for everybody that neutral state is different. But also appreciate and realize that for you, that neutral state sort of can wobble up and down a bit. And you might not be aware of it. You might be active in something. You might be working with ideas or ideals which are more playful, more interactive, more creative, And then you see more possibility in everything what happened, how you, in a way, introduced a bit of fever, the alchemists would call it the element fire, into the body. Or in the many things that are going on, you actually see one of the potentials, one of the possible outcomes that really interest you, and you're steering towards you, and in a way you're slowing down the dance to get closer to it, and you want to get to that specific standpoint where you can appreciate that experience to its fullest. Then you have slowed down, you have stopped the dance, you've frozen the dance, so that from that perspective you can see what's happening. And in your body, in your mind, by the psychosomatic principle, you're always doing this interplay between, shall we be a bit more on the thought side, the idea side, the electromagnetic flow in the body, or shall be the other side, in the physical structure of the body, in the condensation of what is, based on what was. At every moment in the psychosomatic principle, you are relating the mind to the body, and your body responds to that. And in that way, the body temperature will be, say, stable and steady for most people. But there are all kind of fluctuations, and those micro fluctuations are very important, because the body materials are all responsive to electromagnetic field effects. So they are piezoelectric. A change of electricity will change the solidity of the materials. They are liquid crystals. The bile is an example of that. So a change of the information field will make it more solid or more liquid. The body materials are also transistors. That by the information field, the flow in the material will go one way rather than another, or vice versa. And the body materials are also intelligent gels. That means that if there is a change of information field, the actual form of the materials can change, but can come back again. In that sense, our whole body is an intelligent gel, which is also a transistor. It can redirect the flows of information, which is also a liquid crystal. It can store information, or it can process information. And it is also piezoelectric. It is actually a physical structure interacting with the electromagnetic field. All of these body materials have a critical point, a critical temperature point, and basically all of the temperatures in the body are maintained at the tipping points for all of these substances, which means that the flow of the electromagnetic information in the body, our mind, our psyche, which is the software in the computer, will have close to immediate effect on the structure of the body, for the simple reason that the body materials respond and correspond with the field changes in the body. In that sense, when you play the music differently, the Stradivarius will change its shape, and the other way around. On the whole, it is not very noticeable, even though you can't see when people are inspired or when they are dull. They are actually called radiant or dull because of the light comes out or not. Likewise, people are alive or not, depending on how the electric field around them is coherent or not. In the past, this was displayed by the halo around the head of the saints, and now they can be measured as the coherent electromagnetic field, as was shown by Itzhak Bentov and many others. Likewise, in the body physiology, body chemistry, you can see in the skin tone and the skin structure what kind of chemistry these people are working with, and in that way how much their processing in the body is lively connected to the form and the structure of the body. And of course you can also see it at the body as a whole. How has it grown? How dense is it? How solid is it? How long is it? How wide is it? How thick is it? How thin is it? How much life is going on within it? Or how much has it been battered by crashing it into all kind of life situations? Stress and stimulus are, in a way, the instrument by which we help navigate. And stress and stimulus help to improve the quality of the body or to deteriorate it. A nice example of how this works, and this is a very simple exercise which you can do with people or which you can do with yourself. Simply go to a busy street in a busy town and then walk at high speed and take two options. The option of stress is, I need to walk fast because I need to get there. In that approach, you stand on one side of the square and you picture that you need to go to the other side of the square and you need to get there as fast as possible. So you set yourself on a course and you navigate your way, and you will discover that you will have many bumps or near bumps with other people on your path. You can that's the model of stress, because you have something in your mind. This is the way you want it. You work with a fixed picture. You work with a state of things. And by stress, you will create conflicts, and you will create, in essence, criminality is based on that. The alternative is that you have the same intent. You stand on the edge of the square. It's full of people. You find yourself somewhere where you'd like to go on the other side of the square. But in this case, you look at the people and you look at the places between the people. So every time, every step you take, you look where you have most space between people that you can go for. And then you will feel that there is a sensation of openness, of interest, of excitement, because it is very playful. And at some point you can realize that you can actually speed up, because you can go faster and slower, and you can go between people, because every time you see more spaces opening up ahead of you. And those are two different perspectives. The stressful people will get in a more and more cramped life and more conflicts. And the open-minded of people will look for the openings because they know where they are going. And they will see more and more opportunities and openings growing for them. There is a simple exercise which can show the same, the difference between stress and stimulus. And this was presented by Olu Taiwo, a drummer, who invited people to clap and said, okay, the point of this exercise is that you clap at the same moment. So in a group of people, they would clap, and it would be noticeable that people were so focused on clapping at the same moment that they started to clap harder and they started to clap faster. It became kind of a marching, I have to do this, the stress kind of experience. And it didn't sound good at all, because it sounds like the conflict that the people feel when they hit their hands too hard on each other and they're too focused on this moment of precise hitting at the same time with others, but they don't know what the others are doing. So by their expectations and by their limited perspective, they created stress. Olu Taiwo then asked them to relax for a moment, breathe a moment, and then do the same, but now feel how their hands, after the clap, makes this large cycle before it comes back to the next clap. And he asked them to focus on this return beat, this cycle of the hands in the air and the feeling of the openness, and just to feel what would happen and to just let it happen. And in doing that, people discovered that by focusing on this return beat, they felt their hands. They were not focused on the hitting of the hands anymore, but instead they felt the openness of the hand. In the return beat, they had that space of pause, waiting, openness, before it sort of came back into the hands touching onto each other. But they also realized that while doing that, while focusing on this return beat, somehow all of them were able to find the same rhythm. And as a result, they discovered that they found a very steady rhythm, which was very relaxed and at the same time very coherent and very powerful. It's the approach of stimulus. In our body, the cells do the same. The cells normally focus on this return beat. Every cell cycle, there is this pause phase where the cells listen, okay, what is everybody else doing? Let's hold on for a moment. Let's not push it for now. Let's see what everybody else is doing. Let's see how we tune into everybody else. And then, as a result of that, the cells restart the cycle, connect up again, and like those people focusing on the return beat, the cells find that they're all synchronized in the same rhythm. When the cells can no longer listen to each other, when they can no longer hear each other, they lose the synchronization between their beats, and they lose their connectedness, and that means that the cell needs to go in its own pace, separate from what the other cells are doing, and that's called cancer. Cancer and the immune diseases are all about the sharing of your being with others, or the sharing of one cell with the other cells, or one organ and the other cell, other organs. There are many levels that with the cells, the organs, and the bodies are part of shared rhythms. And there are many instances of return beats where there is a possibility to link up on what's possible. And there is a strong difference between, say, the Western mind and the Eastern mind, as it was seen in the North American tribes. The North American tribes were living in the rhythm of nature. They knew that the rhythm of the season would determine how things would grow. They knew that out of the way the plants would grow, then the animals would come, yes or no. And then they would know with the animals what they would or could do next. So they focused on the return beat. They focused on the rhythms of the season. And as a result, they saw the openings in where they could go. If they would go to the one valley, the other valley, they had that freedom to do so. The Western tribe, which came in with their Calvinistic Christian moralities of this is how it's supposed to be done, they projected an image on what was, and as a result, they didn't tune into the seasons. They, in a way, eliminated seasons. The air conditioning is a typical American invention exemplifying that. A lot of the technology which has been created for the Western culture came out of the Americans with their notion of, okay, this is where we now will control and dominate what's happening around us. We have large distances, we'll create cars, and never mind the pollution. It is the focused approach of the limited view, the limited perspective, of wanting to cross from one side of the square to the other, not taking into account that Indians are already living there, and that bisons already live there for thousands of years, much longer, and that yes, you can build a railway track, but you can also build a railway track in such a way that the Indians have no problem with it and that the buffalo have no problem with it. It is just that change of mindset of should it be in your way, which you can only imagine because you haven't looked at much more, you haven't taken much more into account, or can you look at it from a larger perspective, get input from other people, and then realize that, okay, a railway line would be a nice idea, but in fact, let's position it in such a different way, and this is where the Chinese would call it feng shui, that in the normal processes of nature, it actually makes use of where the animals would go or would not go, and where the rivers could go or would not go, so that a different approach is taken, in which nature and the animals and the people living there are seen as opportunities to play with. And just as when you cross from one side of the square to the other looking for the opening, you can put a railway track from one side to the other of the country and finding the openings. The philosophy and the psychology of the difference between stress and stimulus is very simple. It is the same principle as that of are you having a hallucination or are you having a dream? Are you having a dream or are you having a sensation? What happens in your body is the same, but the meaning it has is different. In the dream, or rather in the hallucination, you're digesting something which is still living in your body. You're redigesting something from the past. While in a vision, you are experiencing something which could be anywhere, which might be in the past, might also be in the future. It might be or might not be. It opens your vista, it opens your understanding, it opens your horizon. And in that sense, the old terminology would be that of the devil or the angel. If it has to fulfill a cramped, limited, pre-existing expectation, then it would be diabolical or devil. Diabolical, diabolos, it is critical, it has to analyze, it has to discern the boundaries. But if it is open for what else is possible, it would be called angelical. It connects to the larger picture. So the diabolical is the limited picture, limited edition, and the angelical is the larger edition. In that sense, the stress is the diabolical and the stimulus is the angelical. And in the religions, they understood this and they used the terminology. It's just that the terminology got disconnected from the sensation of stress and stimulus. And after Hans Schley had come up with this understanding, with his description of the physiology in the body, and in the body saw that the cells themselves actually determine if they're going to dissolve the boundary in the body by what we call fever, or if they're going to reset and restore the boundaries in the body, which we call the anti-fever molecules, then actually we are looking at the playfulness of the body to shift the boundaries. And as I mentioned in other talks as well, the capacity to shift boundaries is the capacity to shift our relationship in and with our environment, which is a capacity to change our involvement, which is the fundamental principle of participation in creation. It is your God activity. Generator, operator, destroyer of borders, of boundaries. You're re-interfacing, redefining your interface. And at the moment that you have this playfulness of redefining your interface, you're in the creative mode. If you do not acknowledge that capacity to redefine your interface, you say in the diabolic mode. The angelic mode is where you then experience heaven. The diabolic mode is where you experience hell. Hell is the closed off system, the fixed system, the rigid system associated with the stress. Angelical is associated with the paradisical system, the heavenly system, the openness of everything that can be, the stimulus, the enthusiasm. But the underlying principle is always the same. It's just the difference in looking at it. And in that way, when people are in stress, it simply means that they look at it from the perspective of an expectation, often experienced from the past, which they project onto the present or onto the future. And in that way, they, like Procrustes, they limit what can be. And the other way around, if they have a notion of what they seek to do and leave it to the environment to see how they can do it, then that drive of perfectionism is replaced by an experience of creationism, a perfectionism, which means that things are perfect, comes from the Latin word perfacere, that something is completed, something is fixed, something is settled, something is established. While creationism is about creating or participating, rather being a co-creator in what happens. And that's a different approach, a different mindset. In the perfectionism, your mental image is decisive for what it should be. In creationism, it is the quality of this experience that comes out, which is the measure of what is. And in that sense, stress and stimulus are both the same principle, but they do say something about your own choice of your involvement. If you're a satanic, dominating, domineering controller of the situation, working with command and control, which seems to be strong and powerful, but it is very limited in its scope. And the counterpart of command and control is communication and coordination. And with communication and coordination, you then activate a much larger perspective. And again, going back to the writings of Hans Schley and the regulatory system of the fever promotion and the fever inhibition in the body, then you can also see that the command and control part of the body, where you want to have things precise, and basically I want it and I want it now, is the neuronal system. And the hormonal system say, how about this, shall we do something with it? The coordination, communication. And as you can know from the sexual experience, if you have both of them, then magical things can happen. But you can have both only if you can first have an exploration of the possibilities and the potentials, and then know where you go. In that sense, you're looking at this square with all these people walking around, and it doesn't matter which people it are, it doesn't matter where they are. What does matter is that between them there's a lot of space where you can move, and they can do what they do while you can do what you do. It's possible to have both processes go on because you take it into account. When you do that, you'll experience stimulus and enthusiasm. If you don't do that, you'll experience stress and potentially disease. Of course, there's much more to say about it, because the whole notion of stress is actually derived also from mechanical engineering. If you put a tree across a brook and you stand on the middle of the tree, then you know that the weight of your body needs to be carried by that tree, and as a result, the sides of the brook will need to push upwards on the tree as much as your body pushes down on it, so that the tree can stay in its place and you can stand where you're standing on the tree. You also know that the tree needs to be thick enough so that it can carry your weight, which means that the force is going up from the earth into the tree must go up into the tree and then go sideways and go up in your body. This is the standard way engineers draw these kind of things. And then you can see that in the wood, the force going up on the from the earth and the force going down on your body, they must balance out. They must actually be the same force ultimately. But when they are not next to each other, they create they require an extra force. So they need to. The farther those forces are apart, the more an extra force needs to come in, and that force is called stress. In that sense, you can see that the stress in physical engineering, mechanical engineering, corresponds to the eccentricity of your projected perspective to your perceived perspective. And it's quite funny because in that way, these models of mechanical engineering work very well for all of those levels where freedom of choice is excluded in the consideration. When people project the past on the future, there is no negotiation, there is no openness, there is no interest in what else would be possible. It's a very limited perspective. And in that sense, the model of the stress in the materials, in the bridge, give a very good representation of the kind of dynamic that takes place. But at the moment that you include the dynamic of a change of perspective, then suddenly the mechanics is no longer what describes it, and instead you need to use models which are more like music and dance, the connection of processes. You go from classical theory to relativistic theory, and in quantum theory you're actually allowed to jump and leap and make turns in the air. And the more you allow for those other degrees of possibilities, these other degrees of freedom, the more your vision of what can be accommodated in what is. And that is where you then can see that when you're in stress, you're probably in an idea fixation. When you reduce that to what is your intent, and what are the actual circumstances, not those which you imagine, but the actual circumstances that exist, then with those circumstances that do exist, how can your intent be achieved within that context? And actually, is there a possibility for others in that context to share your intent? That's where the storytelling, the singing, and the dance comes into the story, that people can do things together and as a result can achieve much more than alone. And that's also the way in which in our body the cells always connect to the cells around them, always connect to the organs around them, always connect to the bodies around them. Because there are always larger perspectives which have more possibilities, more potentials, and as a result more information and potentially also more enthusiasm. So stress or stimulus, the difference between the two is determined by your choice.